20th Century Fox would like you to meet the Furpo family. Dave.
Once released from this prison, I, much like my reptilian brother, the pterodactyl, shall fly high above my problems.
Alvin.
Excuse me. The sign says take a pen, not take all the pens.
Bill.
Look at that abandoned car.
It's my car.
Oh.
Their ma.
Beautiful dreamer.
Hey, Edna, how would you like to ride in the trunk of the car?
Edna, are we sleeping together? I think not.
One big temptation.
Forget it.
Forget what?
There's no money in the vault.
And hey, what have we here?
$275,000.
One brilliant plan.
All right! This is a robbery!
All right, who's got the key? Raise your hand!
Oh.
Do you boys really want to do this?
Absolutely!
But on Christmas Eve, it doesn't seem right.
One huge mistake.
I just did what the map said. I made four lefts.
Four lefts? It's a circle, you idiot!
Robbing the bank was easy.
Oh, my God, are you okay?
Well, we're not dead, if that's what you mean.
Why don't you come join my family and me for a wonderful Christmas dinner by the fire?
But surviving the nicest little town in the world...
Here we are.
That's the hard part.
Come on in.
I just robbed these people. I don't want to get to know them, all right?
If you don't give me that money, I'm going to throw your mother out the window.
All right. Love you, too.
But you need any money?
No, we're talking more than I share already.
20th Century Fox presents the story of three brothers looking to get out of paradise.
Is there a bus or a train?
Any way they can. Nicolas Cage.
I'm getting this feeling that you're not telling me something.
John Lovitz.
Yeah, but this feeling you're getting is paranoia.
Dana Carvey.
Come on, let's just go.
Trapped in paradise.
Don't aggravate the old witch.
I wish I was a witch. Shove my broomstick right up your...
Hello and welcome to The Complete Works, an in-depth look into the career and filmography of Nicolas Cage. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me on this journey into the depths of true cagedom is my friend, co-host, and fellow cageaholic,
Mike DiCriccio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good. I'm tentatively pretty nervous about this episode.
you know, you're quite sure how this is going to go. I mean... We might not have that much to say about this one, but we'll get to that.
This might set the record for shortest episode. It's possible.
I feel like we've been saying that a lot recently, and we usually have to an okay length, you know, but yeah. We'll see what happens. Today we're going to be wrapping up Nicolas Cage's 1994 with a look at Trapped in Paradise, a Christmas-themed crime comedy starring Nicolas Cage in the lead role alongside John Lovitz and Dana Carvey. Now, Mike, of the four movies released in 1994 starring Cage, I think three of them could be fit pretty neatly into, like, one category. I'm talking about Trapped in Paradise, Guarding Tess, and It Could Happen to You. They all feel like kind of incredibly safe, feel-good movies that do very little to challenge the audience.
Yeah, I would agree with that.
Yeah, and, like, that's fine. You know, there's certainly a place for that kind of film, though it's generally not the kind of film that I tend to respond to. Trapped in Paradise has the meanest streak of the three, in that... Its protagonists are all criminals and liars and are, in general, pretty terrible people.
I think it's an interesting, weird... it seems like a Cage having to pay his dues for the last couple movies which we reviewed, which were these weird art house neo-noir Western stuff that praised him for taking these weird movies and doing them.
Right.
And then 1994 happens and he's romantic lead guy.
Yeah, I agree with you. And by this movie's end, the trio here are on pretty good terms with those they've wronged.
Yeah.
And you know what? Maybe they've even learned a lesson or two along the way.
Probably not, though.
But that's why I kind of put it into the category of Guarding Tess, It Could Happen to You. Those are both movies about very nice people being nice to each other.
Right.
And Trapped in Paradise is about three pretty lousy people in a town full of very nice people. who are being nice to each other. And the guys learn how to be nice, I guess, is basically the arc of this movie. So I'm going to be totally honest, and I'll say this. I think Trapped in Paradise is the most boring movie we've discussed.
Absolutely.
In Nicolas Cage's career so far. And I don't mean it's necessarily the worst one, but I think it's the most mediocre and the most kind of unmemorable. Like Tempuruch Dere and Zandali and Deadfall, those are all probably worse movies.
Right.
And I was bored for stretches while watching them. Maybe not Deadfall. Deadfall, I was pretty glued to the screen. But they're bad in what can be described as a memorable way. Like a sort of, who thought this was a good idea? Like quality.
Yeah.
That can make them kind of endearing in some respect. Maybe not so much Tempuruch Dere, which has a pretty brutal rape scene for no reason. Endearing might not be the right word, but they're interesting at least.
There you go. They have something that you can engage with in them.
Yeah.
Trapped in Paradise is as flat and useless as movies can get.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. There's very few things that are tougher to sit through than an unfunny comedy.
Right.
And I think I maybe smiled twice at jokes in this movie. And not laughed. Like, I just smiled.
Yeah, there's a few moments, and by a few, I mean, I think maybe two or three lines that happened in the same scene that made me register, that was a joke. And then I moved on. Most of it, yeah. I'm just sitting there staring at a screen watching nothing happen.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like the experience of making Trapped in Paradise was much better. John Lovitz, in particular, has been very open about what a lousy shoot it was. According to him, the cast hated making it so much that on the set they nicknamed the movie Trapped in Bullshit.
Wow.
Harsh That's words.
Yeah.
And also according to Lovitz, director George Gallo was basically a non-presence on the set and had told the cast to do whatever they wanted in their scenes. Like, he just was not active or not participatory in whatever they were doing. So apparently, Nicolas Cage himself actually directed some of the movie.
Oh my god.
Because Gallo refused to give direction. So we may be reviewing Nicolas Cage's directorial debut, Mike.
That's amazing.
Right?
this movie is now worth it just for that.
That said, I mean, Nicolas Cage has directed one movie in his career that we will get to much, much later on. But this is the seeds. The seeds have been planted
right
here in Paradise, Pennsylvania. The IMDb plot synopsis for Trapped in Paradise reads, residents of a friendly Pennsylvania town foil three brothers' plan to rob a bank on Christmas Eve, which is...
What more could you ask for from protagonists?
These guys who were supposed to like and follow throughout the film, robbing a bank on Christmas Eve.
Yep.
In a friendly Pennsylvania town. Yeah. Trapped in Paradise was written and directed by George Gallo, best known at the time as the writer of Midnight Run. He later went on to develop the story for Michael Bay's Bad Boys. he did uncredited script work on Analyze This, and he directed the 2010 drama Middlemen, starring Luke Wilson. Do you remember Middlemen, Mike?
I feel like I don't know.
I vaguely remember, I never saw it, but I vaguely remember the trailers when that came out. That was the movie about Luke Wilson getting caught in like a porn ring or something. Something to do with porn.
Oh, God, that's the best thing I've ever heard.
Most recently, he directed 2012's Columbus Circle, which is a thriller starring Selma Blair and Giovanni Ribisi. This film, Trapped in Paradise, stars Nicolas Cage as Bill Furpo, alongside John Lovitz as Dave Furpo and Dana Carvey as Alvin Furpo. It also stars Maidkin Amick from Twin Peaks. Mike, we were just talking about this. I just started watching Twin Peaks, and I'll probably talk about this on the film bookcast. But I just finished season one, and it is aces. I'm a big fan. And I think Maidkin Amick is a really good part of that show, too. So I was kind of excited to see her here. She's given nothing to do, but she's it's cool to see her here. Florence Stanley, Donald Moffat, Angela Patton. Angela Patton was the innkeeper from Groundhog Day, by the way. Just thought I'd throw that out there. Vic Mani, John Ashton, Sam McCann, and Richard Jenkins is in this movie. So It Could Happen to You reunion happening here. So two movies in a row. Nicolas Cage and Richard Jenkins are in the same movie. If I asked you, Mike, in 1994, which movie were Nicolas Cage and Richard Jenkins in together, you could say, I know two movies.
Two of them. I think we just figured out True Detective Season 3, though.
Nicolas Cage and Richard Jenkins.
I would watch the shit of that.
That would be awesome. Yeah. And the movie made about $6 million in the theater. I was not able to find the budget, but I think it can be safe to say it was probably a bomb. and it holds a 10% of Rotten Tomatoes. It was not well received. So, Mike, I think the first thing I wanted to say about this movie, my first note that I took about this movie is even before I started watching it, I glanced down at the Netflix disc runtime thing, and it said 111 minutes. my first note is 111 minutes with a bunch of question marks, exclamation points.
Yep.
Why? How could this possibly sustain 111 minutes? Like, I knew this was supposed to be bad. Like, I was already preparing for the worst here. And, you know, I go in with an open mind. I try to, you know, be open about whatever I'm watching. But, you know, this seemed like a pretty straightforward Christmas comedy. It could have easily been, like, 85.
Right.
And then as soon as I started the movie, I was like, yeah, this can't be 111 minutes. And then it was. It was 111 minutes.
Yeah, the first note I have, well, I mean, the actual first note I wrote down is, well, at least Matt Janamick is in this. Because we had kind of discussed that this is supposed to be a terrible movie. But my first thought was, the only thing worse than watching a Christmas movie in August is watching a bad Christmas movie in August. So I wasn't going in, I guess, with an open mind.
Okay, fair.
But it lived up to all of my worst expectations, as we kind of already mentioned.
Yeah, this is a rough watch. This is a really rough watch. Now, before we get into any of the mechanics of the plot or any of the characters and stuff, I do want to say that usually we have to note whatever voice Nicolas Cage is using in a movie.
Right.
Like that's basically like a second segment on the show.
Right.
Is what's the voice that Cage is using now? And I think in this movie, it is a little weird because he kind of slips in and out of a Boston accent for some reason.
Right, even though they're supposed to be from Brooklyn, I think.
Yeah, they're supposed to be from New York, but he keeps like dropping his R's as if he's from Boston. But it's only some of the time, though.
Yeah.
Like, it only happens in some scenes. So I did want to mention that. But really, we have to talk about Dana Carvey's voice in this movie. Because holy shit.
I don't understand. It's the fact that when you say, yeah, the director was never present, it all comes into focus.
It definitely reads. It feels like, yeah, Dana Carvey just like knew this movie was going to be shit and was like, I'm just going to do a goofy voice. He's doing like this nasally, like congested voice, but it's kind of like really high pitched.
Yeah. He's one step away from, am I not turtle enough from the Turtle Club?
Yeah. This is pre-turtle. This is pre-turtly Dana Carvey.
The turtle era of Dana Carvey. Yeah. He's one step away from that kind of voice though. It's bizarre.
And it's the whole movie. Like the Turtle Club's only one scene in Master of Disguise, which is a bad movie too. But at least that movie has a variety of bad voices that Carvey gets to use. And a couple of good ones, because Carvey's a great impressionist, and sometimes he does impressions of that movie.
Yeah.
But, like, you know, at least the Turtle Club thing is only one scene. This is the entire movie with this grating, horrible voice that Dana Carvey's using. And it's as soon as that came on screen, I was like, oh, man, this is going to be a rough watch. Like, this, like, my note is like, so this is going to be the whole movie, huh?
My note.
This is the character choice that you're going with?
Is, oh God, please no, will he talk like this the whole movie?
So that was rough. That is a rough part of this movie. So I mean, of the three, the trio here, like, what did you think of their chemistry together? Did you think they were good? Did you think these guys were convincing as brothers, perhaps?
I don't know if we could read that deeply into this movie. But I feel like John Lovitz and Nick Cage play off each other pretty well. They're good foils to each other.
Yeah.
Dana Carvey is just useless, his character. Yeah. But in some weird way, he's like the impetus for the whole plot. And I don't know. It's weird and interesting in how bad it is. But just there's nothing really there in the script at all, I don't think.
Yeah. The thing is, Cage, I guess, is ostensibly kind of the straight man here. So that Lovitz and Carvey can get their antics and jokes in.
Right.
The problem is no jokes. and very few antics. And the movie also gets like weirdly serious for long stretches, and like there's a lot of very slow parts of the movie.
There'll
be like a car chase, or like one of the characters will almost drown in the river.
Right.
And it's like, you know, this should be like a pretty lighthearted, goofy comedy. And, you know, I don't know what I was expecting out of this. Like, obviously, I think they were going for, like, a family-friendly film.
I think?
Sort of. It's a very sanitized movie.
Yeah.
Or, you know, if they wanted to go darker, they should have gone darker. I think this movie would have been a lot better if it was a lot darker. Like, if it... like, imagine, like, it really went all the way to paint Cage, Lovitz, and Carvey as these reprehensible criminals, right?
Okay.
Like, if they were truly the worst of the worst, like bad people, the Suicide Squad, if you will, of
there's some kind of bank robbing squad.
Yeah. But the town surrounding them is the nicest town in the world, right? Like the nicest people in the world. And like this movie has them as criminals, kind of like redemptive criminals.
Yeah.
Like a nice town. And so the town kind of convinces them to be nice throughout the movie. And that's the arc. But it would have been a lot funnier if they didn't change at all. If they were much worse bad guys and their antics were constantly just wreaking havoc upon that town in the worst possible ways. I'm thinking of something like In Bruges, which is a movie that has a very similar plot to this.
With
two criminals trapped in a snowy town.
You're very right.
So it's, you know, I feel like there's a lot more you can do with this premise that can get to a lot darker places and a lot more interesting places. That's kind of like sanitized and sanded down for what is ostensibly like, it seems like a very family friendly film to me. But at the same time, it's a movie about like bank robbers who are causing crimes and like, there's definitely cursing in this movie, right? Like I think they were swearing, but I mean, what did you think of Cage in this movie? How did you think Cage came off? In this movie on his own?
I think his performance or his character? Performances. Either one.
Either way.
I think his performance is okay. He's not doing anything that we haven't seen before.
That's the thing. We're given a lot of exasperated Cage.
Yeah, he is. There's a lot of yelling and silly over-the-top stuff that Cage is doing.
Yes. And it definitely reads like, you know, he has a lot of odd line readings in this movie.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those are at least fun, and they seem like the work of a man who did not give a shit, and figured he might as well enjoy himself, you know, doing these goofy lines while on the set of this horrible movie. My favorite is when he's yelling at his brother, and he's like, you know, it's this very quiet line. He's like sitting in the car, John Lovitz is outside the car, Cage doing this very quiet line, and he's like, because I know you, man, and I know you, and you're doing this. And you've got this whoomy expression on your face!
Yep.
I know how your mind works. You know exactly what you're doing. And the whole time, you stand there with this whoomy expression on your face!
That's the exact note that I've... That's the line that made me write down Cage's reading every line so weirdly.
It was such a weirdly emphasized line.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of that. There's a scene early on when he first gets Dana Carvey and John Lovitz out of the jail. And Dana Carvey's like, oh, you know, can we go to the circus or something? And Nick Cage's like, oh, you want to go to the circus? You want to get some balloons? You want to get some ice cream?
Yeah, he does a lot of weird, silly Cage line readings, which, I mean, I'm glad happened because otherwise this movie would be totally dead.
Yeah, it would be completely unwatchable.
Yeah.
You know, the movie comes to life a little bit while Cage is clearly just goofing around. And
right. Yeah, that's what this movie definitely feels like, these three actors just being, like, dumb idiots together because they got nothing else to do. Yeah. And someone happened to be making a movie while they were there.
Yeah, but I think, you know, we're given a lot of exasperated Cage, and we've seen that used before to great comedic effect, like in Honeymoon in Vegas,
right.
Raising Arizona.
Even Valley Girl.
Even Valley Girl has some exasperated Cage, sure. But, you know, I feel like there's nothing here to hang on. Like, he's just kind of, he's reacting to Lovitz and Carvey, but Lovitz and Carvey aren't being that funny, and they're not being that outrageous.
So yeah.
It's annoying. I did want to bring this up. This is like past the realm of unbelievability to me. When they're robbing the bank,
okay.
Cage goes into the vault, and this local bank, this local family-owned bank, has laser beam security.
That's where you draw the line, Mike.
did that not bug you?
I guess you're right. I don't think I was that invested in the film, and I was just like, yeah, sure.
My suspension of disbelief drew the line there.
I think that's another thing, though. This movie feels so much like, yeah, sure, was its attitude for so much of the plot. There's so many things where, like, it feels like stuff happens because it's a movie. And I don't mean like suspension of disbelief. I mean like, yeah, this is what happens in movies. So they fall in love. They're redeemed because it's a movie. And like all this weird stuff happens like that throughout the whole plot. And they have laser beam alarms because they're a bank vault. Like it doesn't make sense at all.
This elderly couple owns this bank. They wouldn't be able to work a computer.
I also love that the I can't think of the parent, like armored truck guys come to deliver, make this giant cash deposit, and they announce how much it is at the bank. Here's $250,000 right in the lobby of the bank. And they're basically giving them sacks with dollar signs on it.
Perfect for a criminal to steal.
Yeah. There's just a lot of silliness like that.
Yeah.
But it doesn't come off as funny, silly, like, wink, wink, this is a movie meta thing.
Yeah, it comes off as just very lazy.
Yeah, exactly.
And here's the thing. Like, I like all three of these guys, right? Like, I like Cage, obviously. We have a whole podcast dedicated to him.
Right. I think, in theory, this should be a great movie.
Maybe not even great, but, like, it should be watchable. Like,
right.
You know, and I like Lovitz and Carvia on SNL. Their movie careers are pretty rough for the both of them. I think Lovitz has done a lot of good TV work, and Carvey's a great stand-up, and like I love Wayne's World and Wayne's World 2. They're great.
Right.
But like I think both of their worst tendencies are kind of filtered through this toothless, feel-good, sentimental ball of nonsense that this movie offers. I was not a fan. And here's the thing. I'm going to be completely honest, and I was watching it, and normally I have very rapt attention for whatever I'm watching. Like, regardless if I'm watching it for a podcast, like I just sit down and I watch whatever, and I like ignore other stuff. I ignore my phone and stuff like that. About an hour and 15 minutes in this movie, like without even thinking about it, I started taking my phone out and I started like absentmindedly doing other things while I was watching this movie.
Yeah.
And like it was that boring. Like I'm usually so attuned to whatever I'm watching, no matter how boring it is, and I could not do it for this one. So. Now I've got thousands more songs on Amazon Prime in my Amazon Prime playlist. So thanks, Trapped in Paradise.
Yeah, so at least some good came out of this
exactly.
movie. Exactly. Yeah, I'm definitely guilty of that for this movie as well.
Yeah.
It was just like, I'm done. I'm over it.
Yeah, so if you look at my notes, like, there's a lot of stuff about, like, the first hour and a half, and then, like, the last, like, half hour. It's just like, oh, yeah, I guess Cage is making Emic now.
Yeah, like, sure, I guess. Because it's a movie.
Yeah. And her character is very underused, but, like, she's good and she's fine, like, in the role. I really wish she had more to do or was a bigger presence in the movie. I mean, that's partially just because I liked her a lot in Twin Peaks. But, you know, like, every other character besides Cage, Lovitz, and Carvey don't really get that much to do. Like, they're all just kind of hanging out, waiting for Cage, Lovitz, and Carvey to show up. And then, then they show up getting some antics and they leave.
Right. Yeah, this film, it feels like it was trying to do the Blues Brothers-like situation where it's incredibly over-the-top, crazy police, FBI, criminals, like every plot point is converging in this tiny little local thing.
Yeah.
But it goes nowhere.
Yeah.
And
in Blues Brothers, like at least it's a joke. Right.
Right, that's what I mean.
This movie, this movie takes all that stuff pretty seriously. And Richard Jenkins is in a different movie.
Right, like, right, right.
Like, he's in a pretty serious cop drama.
Yeah, no one told him what was happening. Although, I guess, to be fair, the director was never there. So.
That's true.
So probably literally no one told
him. Cage directing the movie never told him what was happening.
Exactly.
I think we did want to bring up this movie's weird relationship with disabled people.
Yeah. I don't understand what this movie was doing.
Yeah. I mean, I guess it was the early 90s, right? It was a different time, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, like, there's a deputy who is retarded. Like, that's like, his thing.
Yeah. In the movie, that's the whole joke. And it doesn't make any sense.
They mention it early on. Or he shows up and does, like, a dumb thing.
Right.
And then John Lovitz is like, hey, that guy's retarded. And then everybody laughs. Or right?
Yeah, pretty much. The deputy is there, and the only two or three scenes that he's in that I remember, because by the time the movie was like is happening, I'm out of it at this point. At the end, There's two or three scenes that he like has a line and says some stuff or does things, and it's purely to show off that he's mentally handicapped, and then the whole room laughs at him.
Yeah,
and then we move on, and it doesn't make any sense. It's so fucked up.
Yeah, it's really not cool.
Yeah,
that's what it is. So yeah, it's the entire joke. Like there's no punchline to it. He just is retarded, and that's supposed to be funny. The joke.
Yeah, and even Dana Carvey's character has some of that. Because he's a kleptomaniac, we see. But the brothers respond to, you know, acts towards him is effectively them saying, making the same joke that they make about the deputy. Of like, oh, look how dumb he is.
Yeah.
And then finger guns, and it doesn't make any sense. It's bizarre. I don't know.
All right, is there anything else in this movie that you wanted to talk about, Mike?
Well, I mean, I guess it sort of ties into that, the whole thing. Like, it's oddly a mean, weird movie.
Yeah.
Where Nicolas Cage is presented, he's the first character we see, and he, like, finds this wallet, and it's, like, got a bajillion dollars in it, or whatever. I don't know, $800.
$800,
yeah. And he almost steals it, but then he sees there's a picture of a wife and kids in the wallet, and he feels bad, so he doesn't steal it. Yeah. So he's presented as somebody with morals, but then as soon as we see him fake the cop out when they get trying to get busted for shoplifting in the beginning. And so like, he's clearly got some criminal experience or whatever, but he's presented as the straight man with morals. And then he just jumps right into robbing this bank.
Yeah. He's the one who suggests it.
Exactly. It doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
The movie has no logic.
Yeah. Yeah. That was definitely odd. It has no character consistency for Cage, in that regard. I guess there's character consistency for Lovitz and Carvey. If only because Lovitz is portrayed as a slimeball throughout the film.
Yeah, they're assholes the whole time. Yeah, so.
And Carvey is an idiot, like, throughout the movie. It's, like, his thing.
Yeah.
He's just talking in a really high-pitched voice, like, I'm Dana Carvey, and, like, that's kind of the voice that he's using throughout this movie, and it's, like, no person talks like that. Like, why would you...
I don't know, yeah.
Yeah, like, that's the kind of voice that can be funny in, like, a 3-minute SNL sketch.
Right.
You know? It does not work for a 111-minute movie. Maybe it would even be funny in an 85-minute movie.
Maybe.
It would be a stretch.
Yeah.
But, yeah, no, it does not work here. All right, I mean, Trapped in Paradise, it's bad, right?
Like, it's bad.
That's the conclusion that we came to?
Pretty much.
But of the feel-good Cage movies this of 94, Guarding Tess, It Could Happen to You, Trapped in Paradise, where do you think this ranks?
Last?
Yeah, I would also agree.
I put Guarding Tess first just because of the last half hour.
Which is so fucking bizarre and bonkers.
Yeah, it elevates that film, I think. Although I think in a review I said that I hated it, but now thinking back on it, it's kind of hilarious.
That happened.
Yeah.
All right, yeah, Trapped in Paradise is bad. Let's get into some Netflix reviews, Mike.
Oh, wow. I forgot about that, and I'm really excited for this.
I feel like you always forget that we do these Netflix reviews, and then every time
there's,
I'm like, that's
good. They're still a new thing.
Yeah. We've been doing it for like 10 episodes.
Look, maybe I just like surprises. You don't know.
Fair. All right. Yeah, we got a few reviews here. Here's a 2-star review of Trapped in Paradise. This has been one of the best comedies I have personally seen.
Okay, what?
Yeah. It is one of the rare films I watch again and again. However, watching it the first time in the movie theater, I was the only person laughing at the majority of the scenes. Therefore, I would conclude that it is not the quote-unquote typical comedy that most people enjoy, but rather a sophisticated one for its use of cleverness. No matter how much I enjoy the movie, most other people probably won't like it. So that's one interpretation. It might have been too clever for us, Mike.
And they gave it 2 stars?
Yeah.
I just want to clarify.
Yeah, they gave it a 2-star review and then went on to say it was one of the best comedies they've ever seen. So that's
bold,
odd.
It's a bold strategy, Cobb.
Yeah, let's see how it works out for them. Here's a 4-star review of Trapped in Paradise. I loved this movie. Cage, Lovitz, and Carvey are all hilarious. This movie is supposed to be a comedy, but at the end, it turns out to be a very heartwarming story. I watch this movie whenever I get a chance. The 15 minutes with the bank heist are the funniest 15 minutes I've ever seen that deal with a bank heist.
I'm so specific. To be fair, though, I do echo their sentiment that the bank heist is the only funny scene in the movie.
Okay. Yeah, we didn't really talk about the bank heist, but I mean, you enjoyed that scene?
Yeah, if only because for John Lovitz being the only one left with the bank, and he's like having them sing a weird song, and then he's doing the yoga stuff with them. Yeah. I don't know why, but that was the only thing that was like, that's a pretty clever joke. And then, that was all.
A sophisticated use of cleverness, one might say.
That's correct. 2 stars.
Yeah, well, here's another 2-star review. The world is full of horrible problems and glorious solution. One of the horrible problems is people in Hollywood and New York and Atlanta sucking up your wealth by claiming to offer glorious solutions. Some films earn that wealth by inspiring the rest of us to value our inherent wealth, but this film defrauds. I don't know what that means.
Somebody just read some Karl Marx and they had to let it out on the Netflix reviews for this movie.
One of the most perplexing reviews I've ever seen. Here's another 2-star review. Meh. It's one of those movies that isn't as funny as the poster would lead you to believe. The poster, by the way, is Nicolas Cage, John Lovitz, and Dana Carvey in a snow globe that says paradise on it. It says trapped in paradise because they're trapped in paradise. In paradise. The snow globe is the paradise. I put this on the same level as Joe Dirt, except without the goofy one-liners of Dirt.
Wow.
I like that he refers to Joe Dirt as Dirt, as if they're on like an informal basis.
Yeah, they're tight. They're real tight.
Me and Dirt here, you know, Dirt's got some great one-liners.
I mean, they're not wrong.
Here's a 3-star review of Trapped in Paradise. This was definitely a very funny movie and left me with a good feeling at the end as well. I always like it when bad guys see the good side of life and change their ways, which was a great deal of fun getting into this. The thing that bothered me the most was the language. It could have been more of a family film otherwise. Yet I still can't say bank robberies are any good for small children. But this one turns out okay.
Jesus. You know, that's like a pretty common thing we've come across in the Netflix reviews.
Yeah, I didn't put any in there, but there was a couple of people that were complaining about the language again. There was at least one that complained about using the Lord's name in vain.
I think that was the same person that reviewed Guarding Tess.
There's a couple of those in Guarding Tess, yeah. Maybe there's a Catholic-based Nicolas Cage podcast that's going around.
That's the most likely solution.
That's the only logical explanation.
Yep.
All right, I have 2 more reviews here, and they're both 1-star reviews. I think cleaning my litter box is less odious than sitting through this stinker.
Wow.
Watching Dana Carvey acting like a child is not comedy. It's irritating. I gave this celluloid turd a good 10 minutes of my time before I hit eject and decided the litter box needed changing. I expected better from Nicolas Cage. Who wrote the script? Possibly an 8-year-old child from Iowa?
Whoa.
Do not waste your time. So, A, I enjoy that he mentions that he thinks cleaning his litter box would be less odious than sitting through the stinker, and then said after 10 minutes, he went to go change his litter box instead.
At least he committed to the joke.
Yeah, thereby proving his point. Also, what does he have against 8-year-old children from Iowa?
I don't know, but I appreciate the shade thrown at Iowa. That was wonderful.
Yeah, and finally, 1-star review. Wow. I am absolutely floored by the number of people who found this movie funny. And even more so by some who credit it as a sophisticated work with solid writing. He must have read one of the previous reviews.
Must have.
I've sat through some really bad movies, but I couldn't lose another second of my life and ran to hit stop. In all fairness, I've never been much of a fan of Lovitz or Carvey, but I can usually get a few chuckles when I watch either. This was quite possibly the worst waste of film I've ever seen. It was painful. I wanted to gouge my eyes out with a dull spoon to end the misery.
That's a really dark turn.
I wish I could give it less than 1-star. Yeah.
My God.
So this movie is forcing people to change their litter boxes and inflict bodily harm upon themselves.
Yep.
With a dull spoon. So that is Trapped in Paradise. Once again, Mike, not a fan.
No, not even close.
I was also not a fan of Trapped in Paradise. Mike, I think that about wraps it up for today. Where can we find you online this week?
Find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you like Dungeons & Dragons, my friends and I post our games at youtube.com/geonerd79.
And you can find me online at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog and all of my podcasts at filmbook.com. Thank you so much for listening to The Complete Works. I'm Mike Smith. That's Mike DiCriscio. If you're listening to this review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, and take a moment to give us a review. Help support this podcast and Filmbook by taking part in our Patreon campaign. You can find our Patreon campaign page at patreon.com/filmbook. Any and all feedback, compliments, topic discussions, and even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@filmbook.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about in the title of your email, because we produce so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us in 2 weeks, where we'll be discussing Nicolas Cage in 1995's Kiss of Death, which looks pretty cool, and we'll reunite Cage with his Amos and Andrew co-star Samuel L. Jackson.
Yeah, I'm actually really excited for that.
Yeah, that looks pretty cool. Like, it's cool, noirish kind of feel. I'm excited about that. And then check out this week's Film Bookcast, where we're going to be discussing Don't Breathe, the new film from director Fede Alvarez, which looks pretty great. Have you seen anything about Don't Breathe yet, Mike?
No, I haven't seen anything, and I'm actually pretty pumped. I'm excited to not know any go into this movie and like not know anything about it.
Yeah. I mean, Fede Alvarez was the director of the Evil Dead remake, which came out a couple years ago.
Right.
And I know you're a big fan of that remake, right, Mike?
Yeah. I really like that.
Yeah. So that's cool. I enjoyed watching it, but I feel like I don't recognize it as Evil Dead. It's not what my vision of Evil Dead should be. But it's a solid horror movie. It's just not. I feel like if it wasn't called Evil Dead, I might like it a lot more. And it didn't have the callbacks to Evil Dead. But Fede Alvarez is a good director, and I think Don't Breathe looks amazing. Like, just I've seen the trailer for this a couple times because I went to go see horror movies recently, and it looks really good. And I'm not even going to say who it stars or anything like that because I don't think you know. So it's just really exciting. It looks really cool. So that's what we'll be talking about next week. Thanks so much for listening, guys, and thanks for getting in the cage.